So brand is taking what you stand for, your unique selling points, and communicating it over and over again with consistency, with integrity to the audience. So over time, you're showing up with consistency, just like your best friends or family members. You might be able to predict what they're going to say. Just the same with a brand. They are able to build brand equity through showing up consistently, day over day, year over year, with the same core message and unique selling points. So that's kind of how we like to think of brand. Think of it as, how do I build something that someone feels like they have a personal relationship to and something that they feel like they can trust?
Welcome to Chase Your Dreams, a podcast for fashion entrepreneurs who want to build a purposeful and profitable clothing business so they can make a living doing what they love. I'm your host, Glynis Tao, an apparel business consultant and SEO specialist with 20 years apparel industry experience. I'm also a mom to a wonderfully energetic little boy named Chase.
My guest today is Tiffany Wong, co-founder and brand director at The Ordinary Good. Tiffany leads brand strategy and marketing at The Ordinary Good, a mission-led creative agency building and scaling sustainable and social impact e-commerce brands. Woman-led and operated, she has a brand-building background layered with integrated marketing management for the past 7 years, mostly in responsible fashion, beauty, and wellness. Her favorite part of the job is working with early stage brands, making our world better. Hi, Tiffany. So nice to have you here today.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining me on this podcast. So can you tell us a bit about yourself and your experience in brand design, strategy, and marketing, especially in the context of sustainable fashion?
Yeah, so I dove into sustainable fashion around 10 years ago, and I was working on the brand side. And then I met my current co-founder of The Ordinary Good when we were working at a sustainable fashion startup. It was all made to order, ethically manufactured in Los Angeles. We were scaling through subscription, a huge learning curve. But my co-founder was the creative director and I was the marketing director. So in 2016, we kind of took that skill set and applied it more towards branding and scaling up e-commerce fashion brands who all had some type of commitment to sustainability or social impact.
Oh, amazing. Would you be able to give us some examples of the brands that you work with?
Yeah, I'm based in San Francisco, and one brand I really love is named Harvest and Mill. So they are all organic cotton essentials. They have a super sustainable supply chain. Everything's really local, which cuts down on their carbon footprint, and they are completely carbon neutral. I really love working with early stage brands, and Harvest and Mill is a great example of brands that we like to partner with, committed to sustainability and also ethical practices, supporting small local mills and local designers here in San Francisco.
Amazing. So let's start with the basics here and define branding. How would you define branding for sustainable fashion, and why is it crucial in today's market?
Yeah, brand we like to think of as your trust building platform with your customer. So brand is taking what you stand for, your unique selling points, and communicating it over and over again with consistency, with integrity to the audience. So over time, you're showing up with consistency, just like your best friends or family members. You might be able to predict what they're going to say because they show up consistently. Just the same with a brand. They are able to build brand equity through showing up consistently, day over day, year over year, with the same core messages and unique selling points. So that's kind of how we like to think of brand. Think of it as, how do I build something that someone feels like they have a personal relationship to and something that they feel like they can trust?
Exactly. I think that's a key point is the trust factor. You know, those household brand names that we all use every day and we just trust them no matter what. Like, what are some examples of some good brands that you think are out there that have done a good job at building that brand trust?
We think about this a lot, and I know that there have been some recent happenings in the news with Patagonia, but they're still one of our favorite examples to look at for having a holistic commitment to sustainability, to protecting our planet. And I think that when someone thinks of a sustainable brand that's at scale, Patagonia would be the first thing that comes to mind. So they're a brand that we love to look at when we're guiding brands through thinking both about their messaging to customers, for promoting their quality as well as promoting their sustainability and social impact efforts.
Great. Yeah, Patagonia is a great brand. What are the key elements that define a sustainable fashion brand's core values and mission, and how do they influence the brand's identity?
In terms of mission, we like to think of mission and values as being really, really unique to a brand, especially in sustainable fashion. So, one exercise that we like to run clients through is having them decide, especially for their values, who they are, but equally important, who they're not. So, it's often in even starting with who we're not, that it becomes really crystal clear what the brand stands for. So the brand values, we like to say, they shouldn't feel fluffy or cookie cutter. They should even feel a little divisive. Like, do we only want to onboard team members really committed to certain sustainable practices, certain values? Do we only want to bring on partners who have a specific supply chain at things like that. So that's kind of one trick that we use to help people to solidify their values. And then the mission should ideally mirror those values and explain how you're creating value for the world, for your customer. And it should be succinct. So if the mission is paragraphs long right now, we like to say 15 words or under, keep it tight, keep it focused.
Okay. And do you have a process that you take your clients through to, develop their brand identity, brand strategy? Like, would you be able to share with us how you go about doing that?
That's a great question. We actually just launched our Brand DNA membership where we walk brands through our five pillars of brand strategy. So it starts with brand positioning, and that's your mission, your values, making sure that you have the foundations of what makes up your brand. The second would be brand positioning, and that's where you really differentiate your brand from your competitors and figure out who your target audience is. And that's what you used to create strategic decisions later when you get to your messaging, your visual identity. So after you know who your brand is and how you're different, that's when you can enter into brand messaging, writing those guidelines. And after that, we go into visual identity, what people often think of as branding, which is creating your logo, choosing your fonts, your colors. But we never dive into that portion first. We always start with the purpose, the positioning, everything that people often want to try to skip, but we find that that's the differentiator between a brand that might look aesthetically beautiful, but may lack strategy and some focus, and a brand that is stunning, but also really strategic. Every brand element should have a clear hypothesis behind it. So that's kind of the overarching process we use. And then specifically for sustainable fashion, the last step is we always take brands through their image guidelines. So we like to say that for e-commerce fashion, you're even more so than selling a product. Sometimes you're selling an image or a video of a product. So that's why at the end, we like to spend a lot of time on making sure that you have a strong creative direction for your imagery.
Oh, amazing. That sounds all so great. A lot of brands think that the brand is the logo, the colors, all the visuals, right? But you're like, oh, we got to figure out all the stuff in terms of what your core values and mission and you know, who your customer is and everything before we go into that. So that's great. It leads me to my next question about unique brand identity. How can sustainable fashion brands differentiate themselves in a crowded market? And what strategies can they use to create a unique brand identity?
Yeah, a lot of brands we speak with are start with trying to differentiate through their sustainability practices or their social impact, which we think is extremely important. One of the most common pieces of feedback we offer, though, is to try to differentiate first with what is a unique selling point for your customer. How does your brand uniquely make your customer's life better? Because we found through like the last 10 years of testing that the first purchase a customer will make from your brand is often due to what's in it for them. So is it the organic cotton top? Feels better on her skin. It's much more breathable. It doesn't smell like chemicals. Something like that. And then their second or third purchase is fueled by the sustainability messaging or maybe the give back messaging. And that might be what comes in your post-purchase email flows, things like that. But we like to say when you're thinking about differentiation, especially as an early stage sustainable fashion brand, start thinking about what makes your brand uniquely special. For your customer, how do you make their lives uniquely better? And then later, you can think through differentiating through sustainability, social impact, give back later down the customer life's lifetime cycle.
Yeah, I mean, you made a really good point about that, knowing, your customer pain points and challenges. I keep preaching this to everybody is, my saying is, you're not selling a product, you're solving a problem. And the better you're able to identify what those problems are and be able to provide a solution to that, the better you're able to get your messaging across to them. I guess that would all come into play as well. You help walk your clients through that as well. And a lot of times I find people or brands are still a little bit fuzzy about who their customer is. So do you help like with them to get more of that clarification around it?
Yeah, we spend a lot of time parsing through customer data because we manage the brand building side and brand optimization side, but we also manage paid marketing and email and SMS marketing. So we're always taking our learnings from our marketing channels and seeing what customer archetypes are actually purchasing and drawing those insights back into how we're going to continue optimizing the brand. So, for example, a lot of times when brands launch, they feel like their audience might be a really specific niche, but then 3 or 5 years down the line, when they look at their audience data, they find that the actual purchaser segments look markedly different from that ideal audience persona that they launched with. So we just want to continue tweaking the brand to make sure that you're resonating with the people who are actually purchasing and not alienating any of your core customer segments through any brand optimizations.
Yeah, that is so important because you could be overlooking or not a market that you may not even know about exists, right? And you could totally miss out on that. So I love that. So let's talk about storytelling and brand narrative. Storytelling is a crucial part of branding. How can sustainable fashion brands use storytelling to connect with their audience and convey their sustainability message effectively?
That's a great question. I'm going to reference one brand that I think does this really well. I'm not sure if most of the audience here is familiar with Reformation, but one thing that we love when we look at Reformation's emails, they are a sustainable apparel brand, is most of their emails promote the product through almost 90% of the email, but at the bottom of the email, they always have a sustainability learning opportunity. So it'll say something like 1,000 gallons of water saved by XYZ activity or something like that. So the sustainability messaging can be more subtle, something like that example. Or there's a brand called Organic Basics where they filter through emails, for example, that are more sales focused, as well as some emails dedicated to just highlighting the factories, just the carbon footprint savings, things like that. So the brand messaging can either be more explicit in terms of promoting the sustainability factors, or it can be more subtle. And that's something that we find brands really need to test. Like, you can't know until you A/B test. So one easy way to do this, especially if you're just starting out, is go into your email campaigns and just run an A/B test to your audience, where 50% of your audience will get an email where the sustainability messaging is more subtle, and then 50% of the audience will get an email where the sustainability messaging is maybe completely at the forefront. It's in the hero image, things like that. And you can kind of begin to see how much information does my audience need and how prominent should it really be?
Oh, that's great advice. Because how else are you going to know without testing? And by A/B testing your email is a great way to do that.
Yeah, we find it can be a little quicker for some brands than testing on the website. You can A/B test on the website as well, and that's definitely a suggestion. But we find that email, it's just super quick, and it's something that's not super expensive too. So you're not necessarily testing through paid ads and spending a lot of money there.
And so, would you be looking at the open rate or the click rate? Like, what are some of the things that you would look at in the test?
For that A/B test that I just spoke of, where you would be running the email campaign and have different sustainability messaging within the email, you'd be looking at the click rate. So is the click, are more people clicking into the sustainability content, or are more people clicking in to when the sales oriented content is more prominent and the sustainability messaging is more subtle?
Okay, very interesting. So you do email marketing for your business. Can you tell us in the context of sustainable fashion, how can email marketing be used effectively to connect with customers and promote the brand's values?
Specifically for sustainable fashion, what we find is many of our mission-driven clients don't want to bombard their audience with too many emails. So what we find as a good starting place is around 4 emails a month. And at this point, you're making sure that you're nurturing your audience and you're giving value-driven content. But it's not an overwhelming amount of content where you're going to get a high unsubscribe rate. High level, your email marketing and your SMS marketing, if you choose to use that channel, they're the only house lists that you actually own. So Instagram channels, TikTok channels, the algorithms may change and your content might not be viewed by your audience, but your email lists and your text lists, those are things that are always at your disposal to reach your audience and actually connect with them. So that's why we're such big proponents of email marketing. And then for sustainable fashion specifically, the biggest things that our clients are hesitant about is one, what I mentioned, bombarding their audience with too much content. And so 4 emails a month is what we would suggest. And then also we would suggest having a mix of value-driven content. So maybe something that's has more storytelling in it, and a mix of maybe the more promotional emails where it's like, we're having a sale or something like that, so that you can make sure that you're providing your list with value and it doesn't just become like overwhelming and you don't land in their spam box. So that's probably where I would start. But email marketing for our clients makes up around 30% of their online revenue on average. And then when you set up your email marketing automation, that will typically make up around 30 to 50% of your revenue from the channel. So those are automated emails that you make once, like abandon cart, browse abandonment, and then they're always working for you. So that's something that we love to invest in for early stage brands, and definitely for sustainable fashion. And then for campaigns, yeah, just 4 emails a month, 2 emails a month if you don't have the bandwidth, and you should start seeing revenue from the channel.
Yeah. So in terms of content, what are the types of content that they should be including in their email marketing?
When we think about content, one trick we like to use is to go on an email search engine. So one we use a lot is called mild.com, and you can search most brands' email campaigns if they're sending consistent emails. And that's a great place to start, is look at your competitors' emails and see what types of content they've been sending out. And you can filter back like years. So you could look at what they're sending out in 2021, 2022, 2023, see how things are evolving, see how often they're sending. And we like to look at both, number one, the competitors, and then two, if there's any other brand that you think has similar storytelling but is in a different vertical. So maybe your sustainable knits, but they're doing sustainable accessories, but you're both made in Italy. Then you could look at them for inspiration. So look at your direct competitors, and then look at brands that are aligned but in a different vertical, to kind of just see exactly what content they're sending. And that's usually the best starting place if you feel like you're trying to build your editorial calendar and you're starting from ground zero.
Yeah. What was that website again?
So it's Mild, MILLED.com.
Okay, great. I'll include a link in the show notes to that website. Okay, SMS marketing. Let's talk about that, because that's something that's become quite popular recently, I'd say. What role does SMS marketing play in the overall marketing strategy for sustainable brands? And can you share some successful SMS marketing tactics that you've implemented?
SMS marketing, I know that it might sound a little spammy, but it is so important to adding a boost of revenue to your business, and then making sure that people who don't check their emails see your content when it's something really important. So SMS marketing, because you're literally sending your audience a text, what we like to use it for, if you're not sending out a high volume of content and maybe your list isn't massive, is to just send out an SMS whenever you have a big launch or a big sale. So your email audience is where you can nurture them through more consistent communication. But SMS, we like to use it more for things that are really special. So your SMS list feels like, this is a value. I'm getting maybe early access to a new launch, or I'm the first one to know about this special sale. We like to think of it as a VIP list for sustainable fashion brands, where they can think through how to optimize the SMS list so they feel like they just have a sneak peek into the brand. It's a touch point where you don't want to send too often. So you For some brands, we will send once a week, but for most brands, especially if your list isn't above maybe 30,000, I would say send just when you have a big sale, just when you have a big launch. That might be once a month or maybe every other month.
Yeah, because I feel text is so personal. So when you send one, you really want to make sure that it does provide value to the receiver, right? So do you have any examples of campaigns that you have done, the SMS marketing that has been successful?
We have Cyber Week coming up, so I'm not sure when this will launch, but for in November, that's your SMS marketing season. Even if you don't send out SMS texts very often, what's a plug and play formula for us is send out an early access SMS text with maybe a simple graphic and short call to action to shop the sale early. To send one out on Black Friday, send out maybe one during the weekend, and then a final text day of Cyber Monday, where it's like the sale's closing at midnight, get it while you can. So, SMS, because you have a smaller space to storytell, you want to be really concise. So, when we're sending out these lar or more of a large volume of texts, it's a lot, but they're very short texts. And for every sales season, Labor Day sales, Cyber Week sales, your customers will be bombarded with texts. So don't be afraid to increase your volume of texts during those seasons.
Okay. Yeah. Because I mean, it's coming up right around the corner. Black Friday, Cyber Monday, big retail season for e-commerce companies. So, definitely something I think that people should start to think about in incorporating this marketing strategy into their plan. Okay. Let's talk about paid ads. Paid advertising is a significant part of marketing. How can sustainable fashion brands effectively use platforms like Meta for paid advertising without compromising their sustainability values?
That's a great question. What, especially with Meta right now, the biggest differentiation between brands who see success on the platform for paid ads versus brands that are struggling is the creative and the creative testing. So specifically for sustainable fashion, ways that you can use sustainability as a unique selling point. Formats we absolutely love would be us versus them for sustainability. So if there are any sustainability factors that you know you just really excel at, that's where you would list us. We maybe like locally produced, non-toxic, et cetera. And then you would say them, and you don't need to actually list a brand, but just list them. And then it would basically be like they don't have that checklist. So that's a format that's very simple, can be made really quickly, and we see it perform well. The other creative format that you can use to promote sustainability for each product would be a features point out ad. So this is also really simple to make, but it might just be a person wearing your apparel or just the apparel in a simple studio shoot, and you just have little lines that overlay over the photo and point out the benefits. So this might be some that might not be directly sustainable, like super soft, breathable, but then you can have 100% organic cotton, things like that. So you can layer in that sustainability differentiation through the creative. So those are two of our favorite touch points. And then the last one that I know can sound a little scary, but founders' videos are doing really well. So especially for early stage sustainable fashion brands, we find that a quick, even UGC style founders ad, it doesn't need to be high budget production. Sometimes we find just filming with your iPhone performs the best. But as the founder, especially for a sustainable fashion brand, you probably have a really unique story to why you started your brand and the good that you want to make in the world. So we find that a video format gives you more space to convey that message, and it allows people to really personally connect with you. So I think those are three of my favorite formats for sustainable fashion brands to test, especially for Meta Creative.
Okay, awesome. You mentioned founder stories has been a really good way to convey your message through paid ads. Like, are there any other trends or strategies that you see are working on the paid ad side?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, the three that I might start with are us versus them, feature point out, so point out the benefits for your sustainable fashion brand. Third would be the founders ad. And then after that, I would test just different formats. So make sure that you're testing one carousel ads. You could even just test your lifestyle imagery within a carousel. Test a static image. Maybe just one image is actually what performs best for your brand. I would test between lifestyle imagery versus product imagery. And then lastly, make sure that you have some videos. And they, again, I would like to stress, they don't need to be super produced. They don't need to be super beautiful. If they look native to the platform, often that performs best. And last, I'm just going to sneak in one more. If you have any customers who are super fans or micro influencers or influencers you partner with, we find that partner ads are doing really well. So ads where you will be partnering with a creator where they're building content and then you're working with them. So when your audience sees an ad, it says partner and it lists your influencer partners handle as well as your own. And we see that there can be a higher click-through rate and less costs associated with that creative format.
Oh, interesting. Love that. Let's talk about measuring brand success. What are some key performance indicators, KPIs, that sustainable fashion brands should track to measure the success of their branding efforts, including email marketing, SMS marketing, and paid ads?
We talk with our clients a lot about attribution because right now, attribution, to be honest, is just really tricky to measure. Every platform almost will be over-attributing. So you'll add up all the numbers if you look directly in the platforms and it would add up to maybe 150, 200%, whereas you want all those numbers to add up to, of course, 100% of the revenue you see. So what we like to say is that rather than looking at the return from every platform, look at the MER, which is your marketing efficiency ratio, and that's taking your overall marketing spend and your overall revenue and seeing what return you have on that, on your total marketing spend, rather than saying, I am on. For paid Meta ads, I'm seeing like a two ROAS. Maybe the platform's not attributing revenue correctly. So then your MER actually looks good. And then from an MER standpoint, your total return, you're making like a 3 or 4x return on everything. So that's what we like to say is looking at your total marketing efficiency ratio is often more helpful than looking at every marketing channel's return.
Okay, and what was that formula again?
So for your marketing efficiency ratio, you're just taking your revenue and dividing it by your marketing spend.
Your revenue divided by your marketing spend. Your total revenue?
Your total revenue.
Revenue. Okay. All right. I think there's always been some mystery around all of that and how do you even calculate, if your ads are performing or not.
Yeah, it's so nuanced. One way that you can think of marketing efficiency ratio is if you go into any paid ads platform, they're going to show you the purchase ROAS, which is your revenue generated from that ad divided by the amount you've spent. So your marketing efficiency ratio is basically doing that on a high level. So it's taking your overall revenue and dividing it by your marketing spend. And then
Okay.
on the back end, as a brand, you just need to calculate what do your COGS look like? What type of marketing efficiency ratio do you need to see to make every platform make sense? So, for example, we were working with one luxury footwear brand and they were sustainably made. They had a really high cost of goods. So, even though we were seeing around a 3 to 4x return on our Meta paid ad spend, they still, it's the platform still didn't make sense for them because their cost of goods were so high and their margins weren't, were low.
I don't do paid advertisement, but do you set up ad sets for different levels, like of the funnel, thinking about like just top of funnel brand awareness, driving traffic to the site kind of, and then more like, targeting more warm leads and then like conversion sales, that sort of thing. Like, is that how you guys usually approach it?
We know it can be so confusing as a brand owner because every ad manager and ad agency has a completely different style. But what we like to do in 2023 is run a more simplified funnel. So often we're just running what are called prospecting sales campaigns. So these are campaigns that target a cold audience, but the objective of the campaign is still to drive sales and to drive purchases. So we like to always aim for a purchase in 2023, and that's just what we're seeing as the current best practice. And then after that, we're retargeting traffic based off of our key insights on the brand and testing to also drive sales. But overall, every campaign is targeted towards driving sales for most brands. That's with that in mind, we also will launch traffic ads here and there to drive traffic to the site and see how audience members will respond to the site to make sure that your bounce rate isn't too high and to make sure that some people are making important actions on the site. But traffic ads, we're not really seeing them drive any sales, and we only use them when we're testing a site at the beginning of working with a client or when clients have a larger budget to spend on more brand awareness and they're not as focused on sales.
Okay, I feel like this could be a whole other episode talking about ads. Like it really can be. I just have a question. I mean, does ad spend have any direct relationship to the success a campaign has? Like how much money is spent on it? Is there that correlation?
It's a nuanced question and answer, but what we like to say is if you're launching ads on Meta, you don't want to start with less than 3,000 a month. So that would be for small brands. And then we for brands that have used paid ads before, typically we would want to start somewhere closer to 10K a month, but 3K a month could be a good starting place, but much lower than that. And the learnings are just going to trickle in really slowly. So that's where we like to start. But it's really nuanced. If you have a small budget, you can still maybe test out some campaigns. If you have If you have below a $3,000 budget and want to test ads, then I would not hire an ad agency or ads freelancer. What I would do is maybe have someone consult with you to help you build out your campaigns. And then at that scale, you're not going to be managing hundreds of campaigns. You'll only be managing probably one, maybe two. So at that point, you can still manage it yourself. And with a little bit of support, we found that founders and brands are actually able to see success on the platform managing ads themselves, but I wouldn't hire out at that point.
Okay. Yeah, because I think I get clients that I work with who are still in the early stages of business, starting up, generating revenue, maybe not quite the 10K month yet, and they want to do ads. So, what would be your advice to them? Is advertising that at that stage, is it worthwhile? Even if they don't have the $3,000 to spend.
That's a great question. It is pretty nuanced. I know I keep saying that, but could I ask a question to maybe create like a little bit of an audience persona for this client segment? Do you know like what would their monthly revenue maybe look like?
Yeah, I would say between like 8 to 10,000
So,
a
if a
month.
brand is at 8 to 10,000, what I would say is if you wanted to start investing in paid ads, maybe start at 1500 a month and see if you can just launch one campaign and have it be a prospecting sales campaign targeting like a cold audience with the objective of driving purchases. And that way, at least you're gathering data on who is interested in your product. You could maybe even have two ad sets in this campaign, not to get too granular, but I would have at least an interest audience. And if you have the data, a lookalike audience of the people who have purchased from you thus far. So, all that said, you don't need to know the weeds of what I just said. I think that you could start at 1500 a month just to gather data. If you don't see a huge amount of sales, that would be normal, but I would test it for 3 months and see if you garner traction, if you're hitting around a 2 to 2.5 return on your ad spend by the end of 3 months. That would be a great place to be. And yeah, so I would just do it in-house and you could start at 1500 a month and just test it. But I would only do this if it's okay if you end up not seeing a return on that investment. So that's the only thing. If budget is really tight, then no, I wouldn't invest too much in paid. I would focus more on organic marketing and your email marketing because they're going to be more low cost marketing channel options.
Okay, great. That makes total sense. So, what advice would you give to emerging sustainable fashion brands looking to establish a strong brand presence and effectively utilize digital marketing channels?
For sustainable fashion brands who are building up a brand presence, I would say early on, make sure that you're investing in building a site that reflects your values. So have those little icon bars that state your core sustainability values. Make sure that the storytelling is clear on your about page, add some blocks to your product page to add more content to the storytelling. You can say, have blocks on the product page that say where things are made, what the materials are. Make sure that all the sustainability messaging is clear on the site. And then as the follow-up, what I would say is build up your organic social media presence and have more storytelling. The grid does not need to look perfect in 2023. It's more important that the content feels clear, relatable. If you have the time to make videos or those founder videos that we were talking about, where you explain the background of your brand and why you wanted to invest in to building a sustainable fashion brand, that's the type of stuff that would be great for organic social. So for an early stage brand, I would focus most on your site and then your organic social for your storytelling. And then from there, hopefully over a few years, you're building up your base, and then you can launch more marketing channels to really beef up your brand reach.
Great advice. How do you envision the future of sustainable fashion branding and marketing? Are there any exciting developments on the horizon that brands should be aware of?
For sustainable fashion, my co-founder started off in apparel design, so I feel like she would have so many nerdy insights on sustainable fashion and the way things are developing. And I love hearing about what's new in the industry. On my end, I'm more on the marketing side. So I think for sustainable fashion, the thing that I find exciting is that when I started working with sustainable fashion brands and social impact brands in like around 10 years ago, there were not that many brands in the space that had large brand recognition. But now in 2023, consumers are valuing sustainability. There's the greenwashing, but what I find to be really exciting is that people are really Googling for sustainable fashion. There are sites like The Good Trade where people are looking for the roundups of sustainable fashion brands. So I think it's a really exciting place to be, where I'm not quite sure what's next for sustainable fashion. I just know that it's a growing industry, and if you're in it, there are exciting opportunities to really reach a consumer base that's quickly growing and really wanting brands that are transparent, brands committed to sustainable, eco-friendly practices, as well as ethical practices. And if you have a give back model or some type of more fleshed out social impact plan, then I think that's something that consumers are going to continue searching for.
Great. Do you have any final advice or tips to share with our listeners who are looking to either refresh or strengthen their brand identity?
Yeah, I think that overall, my biggest point of advice, especially for sustainable fashion brands that might still be in their first 1 to 3 years of business, is don't hesitate to launch, test, and improve. We know that the product development side of things, especially if you're a smaller brand, might take a really long time. Everything takes forever to feel like it's perfected. And even then, there's always going to be something that happens. But the big thing that we find holds brands back from growing and evolving their brand presence to really strengthening things is just being afraid to launch something that's imperfect. And the truth is that everything's going to be imperfect, and perfect is an illusion. So you might as well just test, learn, optimize. Don't be too precious with things. I think that would be the biggest piece of advice to growing the brand. Yeah.
Amazing. Where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
Yeah, they can find us at theordinarygood.com and then theordinarygood on Instagram. And if they would like to contact us, we have free discovery calls that are on our website. So yeah, please say hi.
Great. Thank you so much, Tiffany, for your time today and sharing your branding expertise and insight with us.
Thanks. It was so great chatting.
Thank you so much for tuning in. You can find me on Instagram at Glynis Tao and my website, glynistao.com. Please subscribe to Chase Your Dreams podcast if you haven't already. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others who you think this may help. And lastly, it would be great if you left a rating and review for our podcast. See you next time.